from Lights Out Productions.
From the website of 1320wils.com, I'm Brad.
And I'm his brother Jason. With us, as always, is Honest Crowd.
What's up, party people?
Yeah!
I feel like rocking. Good times.
Rob's clearly in a good mood this evening.
Yeah.
Today on the TKO, first up, we're going to talk about UFC Fight Night Live, Nogueira versus Davis. After that, we're going to talk about the Ultimate Fighter Season 13 that just kicked off Wednesday, March 3rd. Then we're going to get into some of the Bellator events that have happened since our last podcast here.
Lots to catch up on.
Yeah, Bellator 38 and 39 both happened in there. So, obviously, to start out, UFC Fight Night Live, Nogueira versus Davis. The big fight, Nogueira versus Davis.
Right.
not exactly the slugfest I think a lot of people were expecting out of this one.
I didn't see a slugfest. I mean, Phil Davis, what he's known for is wrestling.
Yeah.
I think the big thing that was revealed in this fight is a lot of people were saying, you know, within a year's time, they thought Phil Davis might be someone that could challenge Johnny Bones Jones
yeah,
for the belt.
Yeah.
I think after seeing this fight, though, people are starting to realize that it might be a little bit longer.
Yeah,
than
he's
that.
Got a ways to go. I mean, he was definitely better than Little Nog. I mean, he got the 30-27 decision over him, which I was fine with. He definitely beat him.
Yeah.
But you could see there was a large gap between him and Bones Jones.
Yeah. I guess I kind of felt like Mr. Wonderful was doing a little bit of surfing through most of that match. I mean, he was definitely going for the takedowns early, which he pretty much had to do.
Right.
And like we talked about this a lot, but the sport has kind of evolved in that wrestling is certainly kind of overcoming Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So I didn't think his wrestling was going to get beaten by Nog's jiu-jitsu.
Right.
But he really needed to advance the position a little bit better than he did.
And boxing, I think, was the big thing. Little Nog's hands were obviously better than Phil Davis. He didn't want any of it as far as standing up was concerned. But yeah, I think that was the biggest thing was seeing that he has a while to go, I think, before we're talking title picture.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, he's good, but he's good raw talent, and he needs to be molded, I think, a little bit more.
Refine that talent.
Yeah, before we're talking about title shots and stuff with him.
Yeah, definitely. I expected it to be a little more ground and pound from Phil Davis. You know, I expected him to sort of take him down and really let his hands go down there, and it didn't really happen. He just sort of surfed.
What did you feel about after the fight? I know he was saying that he was injured a lot through his training camp and there was actually a point, I guess, where he was going to cancel the fight, but he didn't want to do it because Tito already backed out of this fight.
Mm-hmm.
He was the replacement. Didn't want to back out. I mean, do you buy it when you hear fighters say stuff like that, or do you think that's a way to excuse a poor performance?
I don't really buy that a whole lot because every fighter goes into every fight injured.
Mm.
Very rarely does a fighter go into a fight at 100%, you know? So everybody's got little bumps, little you know, bruises and everything like that. They're all dealing with that. If you fall back on that as your it's just making excuses, you
right.
know?
What about you, Anish Rob? What do you think?
You know, I think that kind of what Jason was saying, I think it's more of a, you have to be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got something scheduled, you're not going to you might turn it down to switch. So you might be in the middle of a training camp.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have anything scheduled, you had better be ready to take it when the UFC calls you, because you might not get that call.
Well, I mean, can we give him some points for that, though, that he did take this fight, and it kind of was
definitely.
On short notice, and he did come out on top against a veteran opponent? I mean, Little Nog is a veteran.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely impressive what he did, but I mean, don't come out and try to make excuses of why, you know, you weren't as good as you think you should have looked then. I mean, you won the fight. I mean, you don't have to make excuses.
Yeah. I do see, though, I think the one area that he really needs to improve on, though, is the boxing. I mean, his wrestling, I mean, he was a Penn State, you know, wrestler, champion, whatever, you know. So obviously he doesn't really need to work on that. He's had, I believe, 3 or 4 good submissions now. And so it's just kind of to round out his game. Needs to up the hands a little bit.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
I mean, overall, a decent performance turned in by Phil Davis, I thought.
Yeah, it was a decent performance, just not as dominant, I think, as some people were expecting.
Right,
so,
you
know. Moving on, we had the next fight was Anthony Rumble Johnson versus Dan Hardy. Anthony Johnson got the unanimous decision there, another 30-27 decision.
Mm.
Another one, not a whole lot of, you know, action on the ground, really, there.
Yeah.
Seemed like, I think it was Dan Hardy just kept going for a Kimura from the bottom.
He kept on doing that.
That was like his one defense.
That was what he's been training since he fought GSP.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was really excited about this fight, and I thought it was a good performance turned in by Anthony Johnson. It wasn't what anyone expected, though.
Yeah.
Everyone thought that they were going to go out there and have this huge slugfest because they're both just awesome with their hands.
Yeah, very good strikers.
But, you know, in all honesty, though, it was a smart decision by Rumble Johnson to come back out after being laid off for more than a year. Come out, get the win. You know, don't take the chance of getting knocked out because, you know, Dan Hardy, like all fighters from England, can't do anything on the ground.
Yeah, you know.
So I think it was a smart, you know, plan to go out there and wrestle with him.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was the game plan that he should have went with, and he did, and it obviously worked out for him. I mean, I don't think anyone has a problem with the unanimous decision there, but again, not quite the fireworks you were expecting out of that one, you know.
And I think with Hardy too, Hardy also misinterpreted that. He even said in the pre-fight stuff, you know, that we're going to go out there, we're going to slug it out, because all these English fighters, like Brett is saying, they all seem to think it's all about standing up and boxing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They forget, and I mean those Kimuras. Come on, Rumble Johnson proved he was far stronger. I wonder if Hardy had to cut at all.
I mean,
obviously Rumble Johnson had to cut for this fight. Obviously,
Rumble Johnson cuts a lot.
Yeah, and he was very strong. There was no way he was going to get those Kimuras. No way.
No. So, like I said, pretty good performance. I want to see moving forward kind of where he's going. You know, he was on a fast track to a title shot before he took that year layoff.
Yeah.
So.
And the good news was that before that, all he had really showcased was his striking. And now you see that he does have some wrestling anyway. I mean, granted, it was against a British fighter who, again, their wrestling base is not great. But
I believe he was a junior college champion, I believe.
Yeah. I knew he had some wrestling
experience
anyway. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if he was a champion, but, you know, knew what he was doing, obviously, and showed it there for the first time. So,
yeah. The next fight down the card was Amir Sadala versus Demarcus Johnson. Amir Sadala actually looked really, really good in this fight. Got a round two submission via strikes, which is weird. You don't usually see submission.
And it wasn't
via
even
strikes,
an armbar. Can you believe it? Amir armbar Sadala did a different submission. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Amir Sadala. I haven't really liked him very much, but I have to admit he did look good.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of him either ever since the season. I felt like he wasn't really the best fighter on that season. I felt like he got lucky with a couple fights to win that season. But, you know,
he's improved.
Yeah, he came out and he looked really good in this fight. So you got to give it to him.
I think part of it got to be put on Johnson, though, with, what was it, two weeks notice or something? He took the fight. And you could tell he was gassed out in the second. He didn't have anything left in the second round. And when the first round was actually, you know, I could kind of see that one going either way. But it was when he came out the second round and
he was
got
just done.
Shot, it really looked like, his punches were dead weight. You know, I mean, it was just, he was just completely gassed. And so Amir Sadala kind of could do whatever he wanted and looked completely dominant. So I want to see him versus someone who had a complete training camp, you know, had their cardio up to par with the fight, and see where he goes from there. I'm not ready to crown him just yet and say, yeah, he's so good.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to crown him or anything, but I mean, you can see that he's improved quite a bit from where he was
from
on the show, which is...
Is that all out?
So, I mean, it was good to see the progression in his game, though, and he did look pretty good. So.
And isn't that two losses in a row for Johnson?
I think it might be.
Johnson's had kind of a rocky road lately here. He's actually in the past, looks like the past six fights, he's had 3 wins, 3 losses.
Okay.
And that would put him with his Ultimate Fighter finale. He had lost to Wilkes. Then he beat Garcia and Brad Blackburn, lost to Matthew Riddle, beat Mike Guyman, and just lost to Amir Sadala. So he's had a very rocky road in the UFC.
And that's hard with all the talent that's coming into the UFC, especially with WEC, you know, being brought in now, Strikeforce being brought in. Yeah. I mean, 50% is
A record like that is not really going to shine.
He needs a big win to stay in.
Yeah. He really does. Yeah. He really does. So I haven't heard anything about him being released yet. So if he is still in, next fight, he's going to have to step it up a little bit.
Definitely. The next fight down the card was Cheng Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie, versus Leonard Garcia. And this one ended crazy. This was a round two submission victory for the Korean Zombie via Twister. And if you haven't heard of that, you're not the only one.
Oh, my God.
Can I just call... I don't know what I can say on the radio here, but can I... he just had to roll one way, and that made me mad.
I guess that's an Eddie Bravo move, and wow, I was just... My jaw hit the floor. I was like,
just
what?
Move the leg.
What? I'm sure if it was that easy, he would have got
You're
out
right.
of it.
I'm not a professional fighter.
Just, wow.
Yeah,
it looked like it really hurt.
It really did. I was like, wow, that does not look comfortable.
I mean, I don't think it was going to break anything, but he was probably feeling it in the neck the next couple of days.
Yeah. If you haven't seen this, do yourself a favor. Go, you know, download whatever you need to get to watch this fight, because the twister
Eddie Bravo
is,
has videos on YouTube.
Yeah, the twister is nuts. It was something that you just don't see a whole lot.
And this was another thing where no one thought it was going to go this way.
Yeah.
It was a slugfest. the first one. A lot of people said it was the fight of the year last year.
Yep.
I mean, they just came out. There was no technique. It looked like a street fight for three rounds. And then they come out this time, and it really didn't go that way at all. The striking was very minimal, and then all of a sudden it got down to the ground. The Korean Zombie, you know, locked it up on him, and I mean, really showed. I mean, Leonard Garcia, everyone knows that when it comes to anything on the ground, not really his forte.
All right, just to sort of wrap up this event anyway, there were a couple other fights worth mentioning just because they did get some honors there. Like I said, or I think I said, Korean Zombie got submission of the night there.
Okay.
Also, fight of the night was Michael McDonald beating Edwin Figueroa via unanimous decision. That was one of the fights on Facebook that they aired on there.
Okay.
And then a completely unaired fight got knockout of the night. That was Johnny Hendricks, who knocked out TJ Waldberger in the first round via TKO to punches on that one.
Okay, which is really good for Hendricks. A lot of people know about his ground games, kind of what he gets a lot of notoriety for. So he's kind of rounded out that game, put the hands together, sounds like, and got a knockout of the night.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to Ultimate Fighter Season 13. The season kicked off March 30th with 14 welterweights. They picked their teams and everything like that. It's Brock Lesnar versus Junior Dos Santos. Those are the two coaches. Junior Dos Santos got, in my opinion anyway, the better team. It looked to me, from what I saw, like the better team. Brock Lesnar got the first pick, so Junior Dos Santos got to pick the first fight, and he picked his first pick, Shamar Bailey, to fight Brock Lesnar's last pick, Nordin Asri, and Shamar got the unanimous decision win 2018.
What did you think about the way they picked their teams, though? Junior Dos Santos kind of having them fight, and you know, showing them that, and Brock Lesnar, basically all he was kind of worried about was cardio.
Just ran cardio with him,
I mean, what did you think was the smarter game plan?
To me, it seemed like Junior Dos Santos had a better idea about picking his team, just because, I mean, cardio is important, don't get me wrong, but I mean, if that's all you're looking at, you can get guys with good motors, but if they can't fight, you know, they're not gonna be able to last the whole 10 minutes anyway.
It seemed a very interesting strategy to me, so I think there's like something behind it. Like, I think it's like mad scientist, like Brock Lesnar knows something that we don't. So you know, it's hard to tell with the talent. You didn't get to see a whole lot, but you know, I'm not ready to say who I think has a better team yet, but I mean, it was definitely wasn't the most exciting fight I've ever seen. He was pretty much surfing, you know, the two rounds. But at the same time, when you're in a show like that, the point is to get to the last fight.
Yeah, you're going to fight three times, I think, to get there. So
you need to do what you can to you know, preserve yourself. And supposedly, I mean, he could have just been talking stuff, but he said that he only had to show one angle of his game to get past this fight. So there's other things that people don't know about, you know, that he can do. So I mean, I don't know, but it was pretty interesting to see anyway, you know, and even Dana White kind of said it wasn't all that great of a fight to watch. But, yeah, like I said, when you're in a show like this, you want to make it to the end. So you do what you can to get there.
And the good thing for him is he's got his fight won and out of the way now. Now he's got, you know, at least a couple weeks here to where he can just train under Junior Dos Santos and learn different parts of his game that might not have been as good without fear of, oh, am I going to fight this week? Am I going to fight this week?
One thing I thought that was pretty interesting, too, was neither of the fighters, you know, Dos Santos or Lesnar seem to be very polarizing to the fighters. I don't know if you remember the Jens Pulver BJ Penn season. That was a lot of that. You know, there are people that just want to be with BJ Penn who were on, you know, Pulver's team, didn't want to be there. You know, like sometimes, you know, you kind of see that. And with Brock Lesnar being, you know, the controversial figure that he is, I thought we would see some of that. But
there were a few comments like that, like, oh, I was really glad I got picked by Junior or whatever.
Well,
you know, there were
say that.
it seemed to me like there were a few comments like that, and you know, you would expect something like that, like you said, with Brock Lesnar being as controversial as he is.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can really remember is one guy was like, oh, I got picked by the Ultimate Alpha Male, you know? Like, I mean, what are you going to... You're not going to say that to Brock Lesnar, obviously.
No, I think he'd probably like it.
That's true. I guess I'd
appreciate
that. It's not Randy Savage.
You're right. His bone saw. Don't worry about it. moving on to some Bellator events that have happened. Bellator 38 went on March 26th. That one was where we had Tim Carpenter versus Daniel Gracie. That was the... main event of the light heavyweight quarterfinals there. So Tim Carpenter beat Daniel Gracie. I kind of didn't see that one coming. I figured a Gracie would be able to come out and do his thing. But
he's kind of old, though. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they said he did some stuff in Pride, I think it was. But yeah, overall, he was kind of up there. And his jiu-jitsu really wasn't... I mean, I hate to say this because the Gracies really are the ones that kind of started MMA to what it is.
Yeah.
But they only learn one aspect, and that's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and they do it very, very well.
They do.
But there's too many people out there that do it okay that can, you know, pretty much not get caught in most of the submissions and, you know, are good on wrestling, good hands. You can't take one thing and be very, very good and beat someone that's at least decent in three or four other areas.
Yeah, the thing with jiu-jitsu is you only have to be good enough to know how to really block the submissions that other people might try.
Yeah.
You don't really have to know how to do them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to know how to avoid them.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you can work on your wrestling, your striking, your Muay Thai, your things like that to round out your game. And all the Gracies really do is that jiu-jitsu. They're really, really good at it, but it's the only aspect they train. So.
And the strength really helps. Like we were talking about just a little while ago. I mean, you can escape based on just sheer strength.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can just out, like especially on the Kimura, like we were talking about earlier with Hardy.
Yeah.
You can just... No, my hand's not going to go back there.
I mean, ask Rampage. He will powerbomb you if you try to put a triangle on him.
And that's what was so impressive about Hoist Gracie back in the day when he was doing it against guys so much larger than him, you know?
Yeah.
And you just don't seem to have that these days. You know, people know enough to avoid that type
of
thing.
Yeah, I mean, that was when Hoist Gracie was doing it, no one ever seen that before.
Yeah.
They had no idea what was going on. And the next thing they know, they can't breathe. You know, but it's like now so many people know it at a basic level.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the submissions, the chokes, you know, that they know if their arm starts going behind them, this is not where I want to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So they can go ahead, you know, turn that around. I would like to see the Gracies come back and do something great, but I really think they need to put some more emphasis on other areas.
Yeah, and they're so proud of their family heritage there. You know, that's all they really want to do. And as long as they do that, they'll be great in the Jiu-Jitsu World Championships, but I don't think they're going to be great in MMA for much longer unless they decide to expand that training base.
Right.
Another light heavyweight quarterfinal there was DJ Linderman beating Rafael Davis. That was a third round TKO via punches.
Mm-hmm.
We also had Richard Hale defeating Nick Fichetti. That was a round one submission. Inverted triangle looked beautiful.
Nuts. And I mean, he's not a guy that you thought would ever hit, first off, a submission in general. He was a boxer
mm-hmm.
who's converted to MMA, but he's a huge freaking guy.
Yeah.
And it almost looked like he almost got into it by accident.
Yeah.
But it works, you know. So, I mean, I couldn't believe it. That had my jaw on the floor.
Yeah, two inverted triangles now, both in Bellator, and one from a guy who you just would not ever expect to throw an inverted triangle.
I mean, it was like
there.
Brock Lesnar's little brother is what it looked like, and he's throwing an inverted triangle around, and you didn't even get to see his hands, which is what I was excited about, being that he was a boxer and all.
Yeah, it was round one real early on. And,
I'm looking forward to his next fight. I think he has the ability, I think, to be something great. I mean, when you're known for your hands and you can throw up an inverted triangle, you got my vote.
Yeah, definitely. It should be exciting to see him moving on in the light heavyweight tournament there. And then the last light heavyweight quarterfinal was Christian Mpumbu beating Chris Davis.
Mpumbu.
Jason's that was favorite name to say.
What?
I said Jason's favorite name to say.
Indeed. I do like Mpumbu. And that was around three TKO via strikes. So, I mean... pretty impressive. Nothing overwhelming, really.
And that was... And Pumbu's the one who doesn't cut weight at all.
He
walks around at his fight weight.
I think he was 203 coming into this one.
Yeah,
and
which is 5 pounds lighter.
Well, 2 pounds.
2 pounds. I mean, it was just... crazy. And I mean, he actually looked a little outmatched in the first two rounds.
Yep.
Kind of got looked like he was getting thrown around a little bit. You know, we talked about him cutting, you know, going up or maybe down.
He probably needs to go down
to
weight.
I mean, he obviously held his own, but you know, French fighters.
French. So that was Bellator 38. Bellator 39 happened the week after. That was April 2nd. This one had a lightweight championship fight involved as the headline. It was Eddie Alvarez versus Pat Curran. Eddie Alvarez came out on top on that via unanimous decision. Two of the judges scored at 50-45. One of them scored at 49-46.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you give one of those rounds to Pat Curran, really. It seemed to me like he was outmatched in all of them.
Well, yeah, then that's kind of what they were saying. A lot of people were saying that Pat Curran didn't even have the right to step in the same cage as Eddie Alvarez. But, you know, he took it to a decision, and you know, he hung in there. So, I think that was more of a win for him than... You know, obviously he wasn't going to beat Eddie Alvarez. So, you know, take a moral victory if you can.
Yeah, he put up a good fight. I mean, he was in there all five rounds, and Eddie Alvarez looked strong the whole time. He was fast. He was landing his strikes, and I mean, he looked pretty good in there. But yeah, Pat Curran was game. He was in there the whole time.
I kind of think the real question now with Alvarez is, when are we going to see him in the UFC? He's coming off a 7-win streak.
I'm not exactly sure about this, but I think that there is a problem with him and Dana White, because they were talking about, they're not sure what his future is now that Strikeforce is, because everyone was thinking he was going to go to Strikeforce after this Bellator thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now Strikeforce being absolved by UFC. And I think that there's some type of problem there, because now they're saying that he might have to stay in Bellator you know, to do what he wants to do.
That's so, a shame if they can't get that worked out, because he's a good fighter.
It's the same thing with Paul Daly, you know. It's like you get these personal vendettas, mm-hmm. you know, and how do you work those out, you know? So I don't know, because he's creeping up on a lot of people's pound for pound,
yeah.
you know, top 10, if he's not there already. You know, he's a great fighter, but seeing him outside of Bellator right now, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's too promising right now from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, so. It'll be a real shame if they can't work that out. Eddie Alvarez obviously set to face whoever wins the lightweight tournament. There was a lightweight semifinal also at Bellator 39.
Yeah.
Patrick Freire fighting Toby Yamada. Patrick Freire beat him a knockout in the first round. It was pretty impressive.
Freire versus Alvarez, I will want to see that.
Yeah.
Charge me pay-per-view. I will buy it to see that one, because that's going to be a good fight right there, and I hope that's where it ends up.
Definitely.
Yeah, that kid's a dog.
Yeah, he's looked really, really good in the two fights he's had so far. He'll be in the lightweight final, obviously, coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The other was a welterweight semifinal, was Rick Hahn versus Lyman Good. He got a split decision victory in that one. Not a terribly interesting fight,
yeah.
but, you know, got the decision and looked good doing it. The other fight on that card was Ben Saunders versus Matt Lee. They fought at a catchweight of 175.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Saunders looked really good in this fight. He ended up getting a TKO via doctor stoppage, you know, opened up a few cuts on Matt Lee, and he couldn't go on. He was outmatched. He was actually a pretty game opponent staying in as long as he did, because he took a lot of damage.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on Segment 1. Make sure you guys check out Segment 2. We're going to preview the upcoming Strikeforce event and upcoming Bellator fight, so make sure you guys stay tuned for that on Segment 2.